Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Life has a way of surprising us. Sometimes the surprises are wonderful, and sometimes they arrive looking more like loss, burnout, loneliness, illness, divorce, or simply that uncomfortable feeling that the life we built no longer quite fits who we are becoming. And I think many women reach a stage where they quietly ask themselves, now what? My guest today believes those moments are not necessarily endings. Sometimes they are plot twists. Kim Peek has lived through several of them: divorce after more than 30 years of marriage, an empty nest, breast cancer, difficult relationships, and the challenge of rebuilding a life that genuinely feels alive again. What I appreciate about this conversation is that it isn't about pretending life is easy or endlessly positive. It's about noticing the small choices that slowly reconnect us to ourselves, what Kim calls micro yeses. We talk about boundaries, movement, friendship, purpose, kayaking adventures that frankly terrify me, and why sometimes the next chapter begins with something as simple as a walk, a sunrise, or drinking your lemonade from a champagne flute. Listen now to my conversation with Kim Peek. Life doesn't always unfold the way we imagined it would. Sometimes it's a quiet shift, and sometimes it's a full-on plot twist. Divorce after decades of marriage. An empty nest that feels heavier than expected. A relationship that looked right until it wasn't. Or simply that moment where you realize this life you built no longer fits the woman you've become. My guest today has lived through more than a few of those moments, and she decided she was not going to stay stuck there. Kim is the creator of the Yes Life Project, where she helps women step out of autopilot and start making small intentional choices that actually feel good, not just look good on paper. She believes that the clues are already there, what drains us, what lights us up, and that learning to trust those signals can change everything. And today we're talking about those plot twists, the ones we didn't choose, and what we do next. Kim Peek, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you and your listeners today.
And I'm looking forward to it. Plot twists, I love that framing. What does that mean to you, especially at this stage of life?
Well, so you started talking about it in the introduction. Sometimes life doesn't go as planned. But what do we know about all of our favorite movies and books? At some point, our heroine has a plot twist. Something happens that changes the course of that movie. And she has some choices at that point. And hopefully, she makes choices that allow her to persevere and thrive. And so that's the way that I choose to look at it. I've had some things in my life that I didn't plan. But when you don't dwell on those things, when you try to make the most of the events in your life, you are able to hopefully push through and come out on the other side with something that you love even more.
Well, I just want to say that that heroine in the movie, when she is faced with that plot twist, the one decision I want her to make is the decision that I want her to make.
Right?
Thank goodness it's
That's
only a
a
movie.
valid point. Yep, that's a valid point.
Now, somebody that I follow online, and I think it's what really caught my eye with your profile. He has a saying that failure is only failure if it happens in the last chapter. Otherwise, it's a plot twist.
I like that.
And yeah, and I've used it so many times. So when I saw plot twist amongst all your words, I went, oh yeah, we got to talk about this.
Awesome.
You went through a divorce after more than 30 years of marriage, just as your daughter was leaving home. That's a lot all at once. What did that season feel like day to day?
So I have three daughters, and the two older ones were already out of the house, living their own lives. My youngest was
Okay.
just leaving for college. And when my youngest left for college is when it kind of all hit me. And I wasn't being super productive at life. You know, I think when you go through life and you've had dishes to do, food to cook, laundry to do, all the practices and all the shows to go to, all the performances. My girls were all in theater. And all of a sudden, all that just stops. And that could sound really amazing if you are in that phase of motherhood where you're just like, oh my gosh, this needs to stop. I'm exhausted, because it is exhausting. But when it all stops suddenly, I was like, what do I do with myself? And so I found myself watching a lot of television at night and, just scrolling Instagram. I thought, this is just not the most productive. I really should do something more productive with my time. And so I started taking my paddleboard out to the lake at night to watch the sunset. And then I was posting pictures on Instagram, and I had an unbelievable number of people. Hey, what are you doing? Do you have another paddleboard? Can I go with you? And all of a sudden, I had people that wanted to go out with me at night. And so that was kind of fun. And it kind of got me out of that routine. And then I had two things happen very closely together. I was out with a friend one Saturday, and she said, there's a kayaking club. You should look at joining that in the spring. And I thought, well, I have never kayaked, but that could be kind of cool. Okay. And then I had a different friend send me a documentary about a race called the MR340. It's a 340-mile kayak race across Missouri on the Missouri River. So it goes from Kansas City to St. Louis. And you have, I think it's 88 hours to finish it. It's called the world's longest nonstop river race. And I saw this documentary and I was like, this is the most brutal, insane thing I have ever seen. And then very next, I said, I have to do this. And so that was kind of what propelled me into all of these things that came next, was deciding that I was going to do this really scary thing to me, this thing I had never tried before.
Oh my goodness. Okay, you've just blown one of the questions that I was going to ask you later, but that's okay. You talked about, wanting to see the end of it, or like all the shows and everything else. I can remember my children's school year was September to June. And I remember by May just going like, oh my God, if I have to put one more thing on the calendar, if I have to
Right?
look at the calendar 4 times a day one more time. But by middle of August, I was also then going, oh God, like, can we just get back to routine? Can we just,
Yeah.
but there's something about that always knowing that that's a cycle that happens. And I don't remember, but I'm sure when it comes to a complete halt, that it's like, I think it's one of those things for me that I call forced amnesia. It's like childbirth. You decide, you force
Yeah.
yourself to forget
Uh-huh.
it.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Okay, you also spoken about finding yourself in a toxic relationship afterward. Now, many women don't talk about that sort of thing. What helped you recognize it and, more importantly, step out of it?
Well, I wish I could say that I realized it all on my own. I wasn't that smart until after the fact.
Yeah,
But
well, hindsight's always 20/20.
I was in a relationship, and it wasn't physically abusive, but he did say things to me like, oh, I just thought, what do we have language requirements on this show?
No.
Okay, so one night he. And I think he was really just trying to break up with me. I think he was making excuses. But one night he looked at me and he goes, "You know what? You're just not a MILF anymore." And
Oh,
I'm like,
oh
"What?
my.
Excuse me?" And so then that kind of just, I mean, it was like all I could do to not yell at him and tell him to get out of my house right that second. But he was like, "You don't take care of your body. You don't work out anymore. I don't like what you drink. You're always drinking Coke Zero." Okay, Coke Zero, I mean, okay, maybe it's not the greatest for you, but it has 0 calories. So it wasn't like I was just drinking loads of sugar. I'm also a breast cancer survivor, 11 years this month. And so for him to throw all of the, like, "You're not hot anymore. You're not somebody that I desire anymore," it really kind of hit me and made me think about all the rules we have for what it looks like to be a woman who is aging. We're supposed to still be cute and hot or skinny or desirable, as if that's the most important trait, as if our personality and our values don't matter. And so that was part of it. And then at the end, he left in a very abrupt way. It was just, hey, we're never going to be together. Another 2 minutes of conversation, hung up the phone, have not talked to him since. And this is
My
somebody.
first react,
Go
I
ahead.
was gonna say, my first reaction was when he's talking about your body that way, is to say, my body may not be model material, but let me tell you what's wrong with your head. It's like, oh my God, my back just went up when you're t saying that.
Yeah. And it's so I had breast cancer. It's not as if I don't take care of myself. I'm still very physically active. I run half marathons. I lift weights. I do work with my doctors on what I can and cannot eat and, work to maintain my cholesterol and my blood sugar and all the things. So to say that I was not taking care of myself was really, really insulting. But I think it was really more of a, I'm going to say something really horrible to her to see if she will break up with me and then I don't have to be the bad guy. That's what I really think it was, which doesn't make it any better, which doesn't make it any better, but.
Sorry, I've got you on my other monitor here, and your body reminds me of my body, and I was 40 years old before I realized that the bottom rib and my hip bones were close enough together that I was never going to have like a slim waist. I was never going to have an hourglass figure.
Right.
And even when I was super lean and fit and healthy and all the rest of it was like I still looked like a boy, basically. There was no that indentation. Like we, I'm sorry. This is one of the things that really just gets my goat. I just,
Right.
so yeah. Okay, let's turn this around. The Yes Life Project. When you say yes to yourself, what does that look like in real life? And I don't mean the Instagram version, real life.
To me, it means waking up and choosing to have a good day, waking up and choosing to look for the magic, to look for the good in your day to begin with, because our brains are programmed to look for what we teach it to look for. It's that age-old example of somebody tells you, go shopping and you see a red truck. And now all of a sudden, you're going to see red trucks everywhere. It's your reticular activating system. And so we train our brain what to look for. A red truck might not have been on your radar, but now it is because all of a sudden you're looking at red trucks. My daughter has a pink Jeep, and we do the same thing. Never thought there were that many pink Jeeps in the world until all of a sudden you're in pink Jeep on the brain and you start seeing them. But so we train our brain what to look for. And so the most important thing is to wake up and say, I'm going to look for the good today. I'm going to choose joy. And it's amazing how much better your day goes just by starting off doing that. Now, to me, it also means that you say yes to yourself first. And that doesn't mean that you're greedy or that you're not looking out for other people, but it would mean as much as is possible given your age and your responsibilities for your kids and your job and all the things in your life, but to choose yourself first in the morning, not picking up your phone and looking at your phone first thing, not letting all the world's problems rain down on you before you've even had a chance to take a breath and make a choice about what is today going to be like? How are we going to exist in this day? So choosing yourself first when I can, and I realize this is not possible for everybody, but when I can, I like to get up and I like to walk my dogs first thing in the morning. Well, and I used to always say, I say hello, I say good morning to more people before 7 a.m. than most people will in their entire day. It is a whole different world out there on the trail walking your dogs at 6 a.m. So, just doing something that makes you feel good in the morning and then just choosing to look for the good in every day.
I find too the most joyous part of my morning, and I also start early, I get up at 6, is that first mouthful of coffee. And I make a point of making sure nothing else comes into my world except possibly a shower until I've just had that first sip of hot, strong coffee, and I savor it and I go, thank you. And then the world can do what it won't damn well pleases during the day. But you know, like that, as you say, that beginning to say, I need that me time. Okay. That's yes, and we're going to come back to yes. Talk to me briefly about no. When we were communicating at the very beginning, I said one of my favorite concepts is the fact that no is a complete sentence.
By saying no, you're also choosing yourself. You're enforcing your boundaries, and by enforcing your boundaries, you are saying yes to yourself. So you don't have to be available for everybody's drama. You don't have to be available to work all the weekends or take care of the neighbor's kids or whatever. Again, saying no means you're protecting your boundaries. And I think this coincides with another one of my favorite topics is using your calendar as a design tool. What you put on your calendar shows what your priorities are. And so we schedule doctor's appointments and dentist appointments and hair appointments and the groomer and the vet for the dog. But what else? Are we scheduling time for a staycation or time for a getaway? Are we even keeping white space in there where we know that this is just time I'm blocking out for myself? I don't know what I'm going to do right now, but it's time for me to think. Because if we don't give ourselves white space, we don't have access to our best ideas. There's a reason that some of our best ideas come to us in the shower or on a walk. And it's because it's that time where we're disconnected from all the other noise of the world.
You had three kids. I had three kids. I had a four column daytimer. And I remember reaching the stage where I was, because my then husband was gone for like a couple of months at a time with his job. I reached a stage where I was so overwhelmed that I remember saying to the kids, you're old enough to get your stuff onto the calendar. And if you want a ride and it's on the calendar, I will make it part of my life. But if it's not on the calendar, do not tell me at 3:30 that you need to be at soccer practice by 4, because you better just find yourself a way to get there. And I remember the relief that came off my shoulders of saying, okay, I've set up a boundary. It's easy for the kids. It's not like I'm saying I'm never going to drive you anywhere ever again. But yeah, that, as you say, that white space is just so important. And I think it's one of those things, as you were talking about it, that we need to remind women that make sure there's white space.
Well, I really like what you just said, though, too, because what is one of the biggest stressors of women? And it's that mental load of being a mother and of being the wife and being re every the expectation that you're responsible for the family's everything, the family's calendar is in your brain. So I love your idea, just making the people get it on the calendar. And now, as a family, we figure it out. It's not only mom's responsibility to figure out how life works.
Okay, so we have a woman out there who's feeling stuck, overwhelmed, maybe even just a bit numb. Where could she begin?
Well, I believe it is important to say yes to yourself, to make a point of, even if your calendar is packed, if you have a life full of chaos right now, to carve out that one little thing that you can do for yourself. And I call those micro yeses. Just what is that one little thing that you can do for yourself every day? Maybe it means that whatever you do with the family, whatever you do with the responsibilities, at the end of the day, you take a hot bath, a hot bubble bath, and it's only for you. Or maybe you take time at night to read just 5 minutes. So part of it is carving out that little sliver of time and recognizing that you did it, because I think that to start feeling like we're taking more control over our lives again, we have to first carve out the time, but then we also have to acknowledge that we really did it so that we can start building up these little pieces of evidence and proving to ourselves that we are creating a whole different life. And when you can start to see that these little pieces of evidence stacking up, all of a sudden you're not dwelling on everything that's wrong. We love to point out everything that's wrong in our life, right? But we don't spend a lot of time thinking about gratitude or all the little things in our life that are right.
You talk about paying attention to energy, and I think that's sort of a nice segue insofar as, as you were saying that and acknowledging what you're doing for yourself, that's got to help boost energy. I'm putting words in your mouth now, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. In terms of energy, what drains us, what lights us up? And when someone, all we women out there, have spent years, possibly decades, ignoring our own energy. Is there another way other than just making a point of, I've got to remember to notice this?
So I have what I call the six P's of the yes life. And I believe that these things are part of the foundation, that we need all of these things, but at some points they become out of balance. And so I'll just run through the six P's really fast,
Yeah,
and then I'll
please
tell
do.
you,
Why did I not find the six P's?
oh, I don't know. Maybe I never told you about them. I don't know. So we have people, the people in your life. We're wired for a community, and our nervous system settles when we're in connection with people we feel safe. Isolation increases stress. People who aren't good for us increase stress. So people, that's one of the P's. Physicality. I believe that being physically active is one of our most important things. If you do not have your mind and you do not have your physical body, what is left? For me, I would not enjoy life very much if I was stuck in a chair in front of the television or wherever. So physicality is just super important. Anyway, you have to move so that you can. Okay, so a few weeks ago, I was climbing cliffs with my daughters in Maui and jumping off of waterfalls. If I wasn't moving my body, I wouldn't be able to have that experience with my girls. But being physical also means it's also one of the best ways to regulate your nervous system. You get stressed out, life, something happens, you have a big fight with your husband or your kids. Go for a walk, go for a run, go to Pilates, go to yoga. Just moving your body will help reduce your stress. And then there's perspective. Perspective is like widening the lens when everything feels stressful, asking yourself, is there another explanation? Is there another way to do this? Because the filter that we put on things affects how we think about it. And there might be a completely different explanation for why, I don't know, your boss blew up at you today. Maybe it had nothing to do with you. Maybe it was something that happened on his or her way into work. Presence, just being present and phone down, paying attention to the person in front of you, that makes a difference. When we are so distracted, we aren't fully in the moment. And you think about how many people don't remember big chunks of their life. It's probably because they were either too stressed to be present or too busy. I mean, we get distracted. It's hard to stay present in this world. Purpose, asking yourself what really matters in this moment. What is my reason for getting out of bed? And that's one of the blue zone things too. When you hear about people in blue zones who live long lives, they all will tell you they have a purpose. And that purpose could be that we live as a community and we help our neighbor and we help our people out and we all live together. That could be your purpose. I still think my greatest purpose in life is being a mother to three amazing daughters. So it doesn't have to be some, what am I supposed to do? Like some mystical, what am I supposed to do with my life thing? It could just be, this is what makes me want to get out of bed in the morning, is to be the best mom I can be. And then play is my favorite. You have to inject play into your day. some joy. And play doesn't mean you have to go off, jump off of waterfalls, or do a 340-mile kayak trip like I did. It can be something simple like I'm gonna walk on the trail by my house, or I'm gonna go to the arboretum and I'm gonna look at all the different kinds of flowers that I can find, or I'm gonna go bird watching. It doesn't have to be some big thing. It could be just getting together with your friend to have coffee. So those are my six P's. And I believe that sometimes you just have one that's just way too high. Or maybe you're like, you know, I'm not feeling really great. Maybe I need to get around people more a little bit more. And if you're around the right people, it's going to elevate your energy. Environment is one of the most important things because the environment, the inputs that we have, the people, the podcasts, the books, the music, the media, all those things that we allow into our brain affect our energy and affect how we walk about the world. So that's my quick introduction to the six Ps, and I think that they all affect our energy a lot. And you can adjust any of those, like a little slider scale, it can adjust any of those to get more energy, to feel more up, to change the state of your life.
And as you were explaining that, it occurred to me, and I was taking the notes here, is that every one of those things, if you're really feeling in a slump or that you don't have the energy to get out there and do anything, is every one of those things you can start with little tiny bites. You don't have to suddenly jump into play and, pretend that you're having a good time. But like do a well, I mean, you've got dogs, I've had dogs, like if you're at the park, like do a little dodge with a dog. It takes 30 seconds out of your day. It's a little play thing, or well, you talked about purpose and the I made a note here because I remember Diane, no, it wasn't Diane Keaton, it was Catherine O'Hara was interviewed sometime, and I mean, like her or not, she has had a whole variety of different roles on TV and movies and things. And someone said, "What is your favorite role?" And she looked at the reporter and said, "Do you mean besides my role as a mother?"
I love that.
And I just thought, yeah, I loved it too, because I just thought, like, here's someone that you could think is, like rich and famous and all the rest of it. But no, like being a mom was the most important part of her life, that sort of thing. But and physicality, oh my goodness, like that's something you can literally start so small. Like, get to the end of the driveway, get to the end of the street, whatever, get to the end of the block, and then suddenly, one day you're doing 340-mile kayak races. Oh, dear. Give us some more examples of those little yes decisions that can start. Like, you've got clientele. You don't have to obviously give any names or anything, but.
Well, I'll give you an example from my own life. Not this past year, but the year before, 2 years ago, I went to Savannah, Georgia with my daughter. We were going to do the Tybee Island Tybee Running Festival. And over the course of the weekend, if you do all of their races, it is a full marathon distance. So they have a 5K on Friday night, a half marathon in the morning, there's a 10K, and then some other little shorter races. So we went and it was great. And when it was over, I said, I don't really want to go home. And so I contacted the condo people and it was available. So I stayed a couple days. Then I was on my regular Monday morning meeting. And one of the volunteers that works with my client said, you know, I'm just like an hour and a half down the road. Why don't you come have lunch with me? And so I said, yes. And then while we're at lunch, she goes, you know, your client, Rachel, she's only about 2 more hours from here. You should see if she's available. And I thought, well, that'd be kind of cool. So I said yes. And then I had a friend at the same time who had been traveling in Florida, and I love the manatees. And I was somewhat close to Crystal River. And she goes, Kim, you just need to go to Crystal River and see the manatees. And so I thought, well, I've gone this far. So I said yes to myself again. And that's how it kind of started. And I get that those are maybe bigger yeses than a lot of people can do because I was traveling and I had the flexibility to have my work laptop with me and all the things, so I could, I had that flexibility, and not everybody does. But that was how the yes life started, was me saying yes to myself, just over and over and over, and making it a big adventure. And I think that you can do that in small ways at home. It might be, I'm going to get up every day and watch the sunrise. I'm going to watch the sunset. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to get out the fancy dishes that nobody uses, and I'm going to make my dinner really fancy using the fa fancy dishes. Don't you feel better? Don't you feel different when you eat on the fancy Christmas
Yeah, of
dishes?
course.
Or I'm going to drink my lemonade out of a champagne flute. I mean, those are little silly examples, but they make you feel different.
As you were saying that, I remember, I guess it wasn't the first time I ever said yes, but the way I got to a yes, because it was a situation that I would never have predicted, invited, whatever. And I looked around and my first reaction was no. I looked around again and I went, I actually have no reason to say no. Like nothing in this situation is a no. It's not what I was expecting, not what maybe I want in this moment, but I don't have a good reason to say no. So I said yes. And, a new friendship and all sorts of new, adventures, all sorts of things happened after that. But, sometimes don't think about saying yes so much as perhaps if you've got no reason to say no, the other side of that coin is yes.
Well, a big way that this has played out in my life is, so I told you about the MR340 race. It's this endurance race. It's intense. I chose to do that, not knowing anything about kayaking. I had never camped, and I did it anyway. And throughout that process, I made new friends. I put myself in new environments. I did all of these things. It just snowballed where the new friends, new environments, new experiences, new conversations, and all of a sudden, my life looks completely different than how it did. And so, one of the ways that I think is a great way to get started is just think, how do I put myself in new rooms? Again, given what you're capable of with your finances and your time and your other commitments. But how do I put myself in new rooms? Could I learn a new hobby? Could I take up needlepoint? Could I? We have these, oh, I always forget what the word is called. Anyway, there's a talk series at the Kauffman Center in Kansas City. And it's, I always want to call it captivating talks, but it's not captivating. Anyway, I always forget the word. Anyway, so now myself and my little kayaking crew, we go listen to these talks. It's once a month and we pay and we buy tickets to go listen to somebody talk about the ocean or the environment or the mountains. And it makes you feel so small in this big world. It makes you realize that we're all connected and makes you feel like you really can do your little part in your corner of the world to make this world a better place. And I mean, so just, finding a talk series, that was the point. Finding a series like talks that you want to go to. I'm going to go to one, I think it's next week, that is all about the Kansas rivers and the animals that live in the rivers. If you would have told me that 3 years ago, I'd have been like, this girl, I don't, why would I do that? But I mean, my interests have expanded because I decided to kayak. And throughout that process, I made the absolute best friends. I would have never, ever thought that because I chose to kayak, I would make a whole new group of friends. So you just never know. I think you have to put yourself in uncomfortable situations sometimes and push past that initial no, because you never know what's going to be on the other side of that.
Yeah, I interviewed somebody several months ago who moved to a new town, and I guess a lot of people ran in that in her neighborhood. And so she decided to start a running club. And so she's talking about this running club and how, she invited a few people and then they invited people, and it ended up being this massive, great running club,
How cool.
and I made some comment about the fact of her running, and she said, "Oh no, I'm not a runner." But it was just a way to connect with the people that she saw every day.
Oh, I love
And
that.
she ended up with, yeah, like a ton of friends and new community and everything else, even though she wasn't one of those people. So, yeah. So, just to bring it down a notch, though, because, some of at this age, some women might be taking care of a parents or a sick spouse or something like that. It can be something small. In terms of, you're not being selfish if you say, like mother's in bed at 8 o'clock, I'm going to, watch this series on, like the talks in wherever in Kansas, about rivers that goes from, 8:30 to 10:30, something like that, or a specific thing. And I'm not suggesting, I guess I'm not dissing it either, but, binge watching goofy stuff, but just to make that choice of yes, this is something I can do for me, and sometimes you have to work to find the space, the time space, but you can do something on a small level too.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we do though is we tell ourselves no because it's what we're comfortable with. We don't want to expand the ceiling, and we can't sometimes live bigger by keeping our ceiling here. We have to be willing to say yes and push our comfort zone a little bit. And even I noticed caught myself, because I think this is a big part of it, is catching yourself and then choosing differently. So every time you start to say no, or you feel that pressure in your chest and you're like, oh my gosh, what just happened? So I was on another podcast recently, and just yesterday she posted the link and she tagged me on Instagram, or not on Instagram, on LinkedIn. And you know how LinkedIn works? It goes throughout your whole network. So it isn't like a lot of the other things where I can choose to share it or not. All of a sudden it's out there and all my however many years, 40 years of work experience, all my connections see that I was on this podcast talking about my divorce, of all things, right? And I initially had this, oh my gosh, what did I do? What did I do? What did I do? And then I thought, wait a second, use your own lessons. And so I took some time to breathe. And then I thought, okay, why don't we just go and listen to it? And see how bad was it? Maybe you didn't sound as dumb as what all that negative self-talk in your head just told you. So I went and listened to it and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of proud of that. I did okay. And so all of a sudden there was no need to panic. And I actually went and commented on it and I started sharing the podcast. But just that initial thing, you have to catch your old habits. You have to catch your old habits if you're going to leap to the next level. And you can do that in small ways, but you have to be aware of all those negative things that you're telling yourself in your head and be like, what else could be true? Maybe I actually was decent. Maybe I didn't suck. And go from there.
Okay, first of all, you've just given me a tip. I'm gonna when this goes live.
Tag
No.
on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
Tag on LinkedIn, they don't have a choice.
right. That's right. There you go. The other thing that I've noticed over the years, and especially since getting online, which can also be a leap, is, we are so often afraid of being seen. And the reality is, you rarely are as seen as you think you're going to be. And how many of your friends that matter are going to, if they see you, judge you poorly, unless you're dissing them. But yeah, I think we have, it's one of those times when we have sort of an overinflated view of our own self-importance, whereas in reality, you can take that small step, leap, whatever, and the ripples are not going to go that far. It will affect you, but the ripples aren't going to go that far in reality.
Well, because we're all worried about our own selves. We're not worried about who said something stupid on LinkedIn. I mean, it might last
Yeah.
if it truly was stupid, which it wasn't, but if it truly was stupid, they're going to forget about it tomorrow. So it's really not that big of a deal. But I think
Yeah.
sometimes we put too much pressure on ourselves And then we don't grow, we don't take risks because of all that negative self-talk that we have. And we have to learn how to be more comfortable. And those are things that you don't do immediately. You slowly start to expand your tolerance level.
One other thing I've noticed, and just judging from the things you've said, I think you're going to agree with me, is once again, women at this age, 60s, 70s, you know, I mentioned the aging parents, relationships, spouses are dying or gray divorces on the rise. There might be financial concerns with retirement, that sort of thing. You talked about that physicality and how, and I've noticed that when I am absolutely exhausted, tired, feeling like the weight of the world is on my shoulders, if I get out for some sort of a walk, I used to run, but not anymore, a walk, get that air happening, the air exchange, is a lot of that heavy stuff is a lot lighter with movement.
I agree. Another little quick thing that I teach people, I call it nice. When you all of a sudden feel that fight or flight or that panic or, oh my gosh, somebody's asking me to go to a party and I really don't want to go. Should I go? You know, whatever that internal turmoil is for you, I say be nice to yourself. Notice the thought, interrupt it. You know, this the thing we mentioned before, what else could be true? Is there another way to handle this? So notice it, interrupt it, calm yourself. So take your deep breaths, go for depending on what the situation is. Again, you know, you might have time for a walk, you might not, but take some time to take some breaths. Take a beat. Think about, you know, do I need to panic right now? So notice, interrupt, calm. In some situations, the C can also be for change. Change your thought, because maybe what your initial thought is isn't what you're thinking now. And then engage, pick a different action, do something. So I've calmed myself, I've noticed what's going on. Now I'm going to go for that little walk and give myself time to cool down or give myself time to think of some other possibilities. And I think that really helps a lot if you can remember just being nice to yourself in this moment and then go. Take those 4 steps to kind of get back on an even keel and figure out how you're gonna move forward.
How do we discern, who that's my word for the day, between a hard season that's only going to be temporary and a sign that something absolutely does need to change? Is there any way to discern between the two? Something that's just it's tough for like whatever, a couple of weeks, something, and something that's no, this has got to change.
Well, you know, we all have hard times, right? We have aging parents. Maybe somebody close to us has passed away. I mean, there's really, really bad, hard things that happen to all of us. And so none of this philosophy, none of any of the things I say are meant to diminish any hard thing that somebody is going through. But I do think that it's all in how you handle it. I have a friend who had a daughter who ultimately passed away. She was the same age as one of my daughters. She went through an extended chronic illness. And I have never learned more from a single person in my life as I did from this mom, where they looked for the good in every day. The girl could be in the hospital for a week-long stretch, but what good is going to happen in the hospital? Maybe it's the way the nurse gave us an extra drink or refreshed our ice cubes or plumped up our pillow or whatever. But they found a way, even in the absolute worst times, to acknowledge what made that day better or what made that day good. And she started a foundation called the Live Big Foundation after her daughter passed away. And it was all based in their philosophy of how they lived. And it was, we live the biggest that we can on every single day. So do what you're capable of in that time. So if she's in the hospital, we're making the best of the hospital. But, you know, if she's really going through a good stretch, She got invited to sing the national anthem at the Roy for the Kansas City Royals. We're gonna be singing at the Royals with our oxygen tank strapped onto us. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but I just think we have to do our best to look for the bright spots in every situation. And you go day by day, but when we are filtering our life looking for the good, it's always going to make the hard times better than they would have been.
And I'm thinking that we can recognize in ourselves if we are always noticing the bad as opposed to finding the good. Even if you have to search a little bit, even if you have to dig, even if you have to say this, that by the end of the day it's going to be crap, but right at this moment, like the sun just broke through for 10 minutes, like whatever. Just make a point of turning that mindset into find the good. So looking back, you've had some serious plot twists. Do you see them differently than how you saw them when you were in the middle of them?
Oh gosh, in the middle of them, it felt like the worst thing that had ever happened to me. It felt like it was never going to end. But that is actually part of where the Yes Life Project came from, was when I went through this breakup, it devastated me. I just could not, I mean, it messed me up. And what I was forced to do was to look at my life and think, okay, Kim, you have survived some really hard things. What are the tools that you gave yourself? What are the tools you used to be resilient? What are the tools you used to move forward in those situations? And I realized that I actually did have a little toolkit, and a lot of that is the six P's that we went through. But I lost my mom when I was 24 years old. That was horrible. I had chronically ill daughters for a short period of time, thank goodness. But my husband at the time was traveling a ton, and I had these two of my three kids were really, really sick. They both missed an extended, like almost a full quarter of school because of some mysterious, we don't even know what still. And so, that your stress builds. Then I had breast cancer. At the time, I thought that was the worst thing that was ever going to happen to me, but we got through that. But we also can't compare our bad to somebody else's bad because everybody has, like, it's relative. Everybody has something that is the worst thing that they personally have ever been through at that time. We all have bad things. And I forgot where we were going with that question. But
Well, just whether now whether looking back, those plot twists were different, and it would appear that when you were in the middle of it was gargantuan, but now looking back,
I think you just have to learn your coping skills. And really, for me, one of the biggest things was really leaning on my people, finding the right people, being fortunate enough to have the right people in my life when those things happened.
I've also heard, well, sorry, I should just back up my own bus for a minute, is not everybody is cut out for journaling. But listening to what you were saying, when you figured this out and you figured that out, you've had, you realized you had this tool or you found that tool in the midst of all of it. If there's something that you can jot that thing down on, and then just even put it on one of those little punch nail things, or thumbtack it to the wall, something like that, so that you can look at the end of that tough period or a decade later and say, okay, I've got this great skill now that grew out of that hard time.
When I had breast cancer, somebody gave me what I thought was dumb advice at the time, but it turned out to be the most, I think, life-changing, brilliant piece of advice. She told me, take a picture of something good every day. And it was brilliant because who would think when you're going through chemo, you don't have any hair, you're crawling on the floor to go to the bathroom because you're nauseous? Who would think that in that moment there is anything good? I have so many memories of good things that happened to me during that time of my life because I was searching for the good in every day.
I can remember another woman that I spoke with who also had breast cancer. And you know, and it's times like that when your friends will rally, what can I do? Have that list. Okay. I obviously don't want you calling me every day because that'll take too much energy, but email me a picture of a kangaroo every single morning. That's all you need to do. You know, and have
I
that
love
list
that.
for those friends. Anything that's going to brighten your day as you're in the midst of whatever issue it is. Have, you know, anybody that says, what can I do to help? Well, here's something you can do. And yeah, just having that whole thing organized
That's
before it gets
important to
really bad.
remember too, isn't it? That people around you really do want to do something for you, and sometimes you have to let them. Like, you might want to be tough and handle it all by yourself, but sometimes you have to let the people in your life in so they can do, because it makes them feel better.
Well, and I don't think that, let's stick on this little cancer journey for a moment. If somebody's going through the cancer journey, nobody's expecting them to be stoic and superwoman and all the rest of it. It's like, no, there's going to be days when you're crawling on your hands and knees to the toilet. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to be weak in that moment because, you know, we know who you are, big picture you. So yeah, just letting people in.
I had friends who would take me out to breakfast before my chemo appointments because, you know, it's kind of cyclical. You feel really sick after, but then you kind of start to be on a high. So before every chemo appointment, we would go out to breakfast because it was my last meal I was going to enjoy for a while. But that was our thing. And then when I got done, they made printed out like a little graduation certificate, and I got to, and rolled it up. They had a rolled up diploma, and I got to graduate at breakfast that day, which was, you know, it was just fun. I also, not to dwell on this, but I also, when I lost all my hair, I was afraid to go out in public. I didn't want people to see me. And so I had a friend who had taken me wig shopping, and I had my new wig on. I think I had my new wig on, but I was still afraid people were staring at me. And so I had another friend who just took me to like all the cute little boutiques, and we went shopping all day, and she helped me pick out some new clothes, and we went out to lunch and made a whole day of being in public and realizing nobody was gonna. No, it wasn't when I had my wig. It was when I didn't have any hair and I just had like a little hat. So we made a whole day of being out in public so that I could realize that people really weren't going to talk about me or make fun of me or look at the sick person, or, you know, all the things I was afraid were going to happen.
Was there a moment, now you know where my brain goes, was there a moment as you got that diploma that you thought, maybe I can drag this on a little bit because I really enjoy being taken out for breakfast?
No. No, but I
Ah,
do
dear.
always say that I don't want anybody to ever have to go through this to get this much attention, but I have never felt so loved as I felt when I had breast cancer. I mean, the amount of, I mean, I had three girls, they were all at really critical growing up ages. So we had a lot of friends and, you know, their friends. And then I had my own friends and just everybody rallied around me. And I really, everybody should feel that because we all get to, well, we don't get to experience it when we die because we're not here.
All
But, you
right.
know, it's the same outpouring that people get when they die. And I got to hear, you know, have all these people just doting on me for the whole time, which, again, don't recommend getting cancer. Don't want to
No,
glamorize
no.
it, but I had some really great people around me who helped me make the most of a bad time in my life.
Well, and we can even lighten it up a wee bit insofar as, you know, maybe it is an empty nest where your children are all on their road to being successful, but you're feeling lonely. Chances are there's another person in your life who is either going through it, has gone through it, or might appreciate helping you through it because it's going to be her turn in 2 years, something like that. So, you know, it's yeah, just opening your world up to at least a few people.
Have you
It's
seen the
yeah.
thing where the younger people, probably more like my daughter's ages in their 20s and 30s, are doing these things they call admin nights, and they just get together and they bring all their bill paying and lists and just all the garbage
Oh.
you don't want to do by yourself. They just get together and have a night of, let's do our administrative life things together and, have some drinks or some snacks or watch a movie together while we do it. It's kind of a good idea.
That's a fabulous idea. I moved to a new town in 2007, take care of my mom, and I can remember thinking, I don't know a lot of people, I'm going to have to, and there was a is it like a co-working or something space? And it was a local cafe that said, as long as you come between, like in these morning hours, order a coffee, you're welcome to sit for a couple of hours till our lunch hour. And so I thought, this is something I got to do. And I show up and I'm literally the oldest by 20 years in the room. But I was there, I had my laptop, I sat down. And at one point in time, I remember just putting my elbows on the table and going like, oh my God, I hate Facebook if they make one more change. And the young woman beside me said, well, what's the problem? And so I told her, and she said, oh, I encountered that just the other day. She said, here's what you do. If I'd been at home, stayed at home, I would have just gone crazy. I would have been cursing and swearing, probably slapped my laptop down, like just sharing some of the, I don't know what, obviously Facebook is not a big deal. Possibly paying bills is, but to say, oh my God, like I don't understand the way they've arranged this billing situation. Somebody else might be able to say, we're getting
Right.
really specific here, but it can apply in so many different areas on so many different levels.
Yeah. And
So.
I think people have a hard time being open to sharing even tiny struggles, like I'm frustrated with Facebook. I think people have a hard time opening themselves up to sharing with strangers, to making small talk in the checkout line, whatever it is. But you just don't know where you're going to meet that next great person or next great friend. It's hard to make new friends or to form connections, especially as you get older.
I can't tell you how many times I've invited myself to someone else's meal when I've had the, like the bread and tomatoes, and they've had the lettuce and the cucumber, and I say, hey, we could get together and have a nice little salad here,
I love
and
that.
obviously we don't do it, but it, at least it's a communication. It's something to lighten
Yeah,
up the
but that
day.
would be
So
a really good idea, wouldn't it? And maybe when you started
so.
talking, I was picturing BLTs in my brain. That would be another great one where everybody brings a
There you
piece.
go. Okay, well, you go get the B and bring it on over.
Right?
We've got the L and the T. Ah, dear. Okay, is there anything we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women to think about as they listen to us natter on?
I've really been hit lately by this idea that we aren't guaranteed tomorrow. I was on this big trip over the winter because that trip I told you about that I took 2 winters ago, I went and I did it on purpose this winter for 7 weeks and just thought, I'm gonna go live by the beach for 7 weeks. While I was on that trip, my brother had a heart attack and he's fine. Everything turned out fine, but he's my younger brother. And it just really made me think. We know this to be true. My mom did not live a long life, but we are not guaranteed tomorrow. I think about my in-laws and how they spent all of their prime physical body years taking care of children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And then by the time they had time, my mother-in-law became ill and they couldn't travel. We just don't know what's going to happen in life. So, if there's something you want to do, you need to find a way to make it happen. Start planning that trip. Start organizing your life in a way that you can do some of the things you want to. And I realize that sometimes we're restricted by money and jobs and our family situation, all the things, but say yes to yourself. Find ways that you can incorporate little bits of joy into your day because life will just be happier. Say yes to yourself and just take those steps so that you are living a life that you want to on your terms.
I was just thinking as you said that too, like sometimes I'm sure there's women out there who say, you don't know my life, and they really cannot find a way to reach even the small personal goals. But reach out to a complete stranger that you're never going to see anymore and say, if this was you, what would you do? Or how would you, because sometimes somebody else's imagination
I
can
love
help
that.
solve your problem.
Or start going through your list of friends who still lives in your area that you've lost touch with. I have friends that we don't have a lot of the same hobbies anymore. We don't have our kids in common anymore, whatever. We still make a point to go out to lunch together every couple of months. But you have to take that effort because when the proximity is gone, when they're not in your orbit every day or every week, whatever, you lose those connections. But I think that's important too.
2 months ago, I had lunch with a schoolmate that I hadn't seen for 55 years.
That is so cool.
So we agreed to get together for lunch and had lunch. And 6 hours later, I said, I have got a long drive to get home. I'm going to leave now. So yeah, it was just pretty cool.
I
So
love that. That's awesome.
what is the plot twist playbook?
So that is my guide. It's a little mini course. It's an audio course that helps people reset their state because what we've talked about with our state, our mental state of mind, affects everything. It affects our thoughts, it affects our beliefs, it affects our actions, and then everything steamrolls. And so it helps us first come to a sense of calm and then identify or I cannot talk today. And then identify self-limiting beliefs, those negative thoughts, so that we can stop those negative thoughts and start to raise the ceiling of what we will tolerate in our life so that we can eventually create a life that we love. So it's a mini course. It's an audio course. I love using audio. I created it through Hello Audio, which is one of my favorites, and it has a little workbook guide to help get you through. Just a couple of short audio files to help you start turning your life around and have a life that you love.
Well, I love the way it says a five-step reset for when life didn't go as planned, because don't we all have those occasions? That's not the way I was thinking this was going to happen. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
My website is theyeslifeproject.com, and you can find me on Instagram at The Yes Life Project.
Oh, okay, good. Scrolling down. Now I've also got, oh, it's Apple Podcasts. I was thinking, why is there an Apple there? So I've got Facebook and Instagram. Okay, good. What else do I want to? It was social. You just did that. Three podcasts.
I do have three podcasts. They're not all active at the time, but during COVID, I started a business with my daughter who was living in New York. She had just graduated to become an actress right as COVID hit. So she has a New York apartment in the middle of COVID where you can't find a job. And we said, ha, what skills do we have that we can use to pay your rent? And so we started a company. It's called Iris Digital Media Group. And it originally was a social media marketing company. And it's grown in scope since then. But we have a podcast together called The Digital Dreamer. So it's a business focused one. And then I have one called Paddle Sports Lifestyle, which is the first season is all about my first year taking on the MR340 and just all you can hear all my self-doubt, all my panicked thoughts. You can see me in real time trying to figure out, oh my gosh, I bit off more than I can chew. How am I going to survive this thing? So that's what that one is about. And then my main one is Postcards from the Yes Life, and it is just all about the topics that we've been talking about here today.
Okay. That's a, I'm just sorry. I just it blows me away, this whole MR340. Now, I mentioned at the very beginning that you really messed up one of my questions, because I always ask about a personal question before we close. And I was going to ask you about the MR340. What does but let's just keep on that subject. What does MR stand for?
Missouri River.
Okay, and it's 340
So it's the distance from across 340 miles from Kansas City to, it's actually St. Charles, which is a suburb of St. Louis. So you go across the state of Missouri on the river.
Holy crikey. Now, the first time you did it, it got called because of bad weather or something, but also you weren't very experienced at that point in time.
No, I was not. I decided to do it in January. I got my first kayak in April because in Kansas City, we don't have great weather for getting in the water until about then. And then the race was in July. So I had just a few months to learn how to kayak. And part of it, if you're not super fast, the winners will do it in about 36 hours. But the rest of us will do it closer to 80-ish hours. I mean, there's a whole range. There's a whole range of people in all those times. But I was closer, on track to be closer to in the 80s, which means that you have to figure out how you're going to sleep at night, which involves camping. And so I had to learn how to
It's a
camp.
single kayak, right? You're in a single.
So everybody has a crew. You have a crew person who's on the ground, and you coordinate with them when you're going to stop, and they'll refresh your water and your food. You make plans with them where you're going to stop for the night. And hopefully, you have a crew person who can be just kind of fluid and go with the flow because you can have the best plan, but the weather and how your body is feeling, all of that stuff is going to change it. So you have to be really flexible. And that first year, oh, it was storming so bad on the first night. We are just like, okay, we are better off paddling through the lightning and getting to our end point than we are like sitting in the rain all night on a sandbar. And so we just kept on going. But the weather is one of the biggest things. The wind, the river, curves. It's not just a straight line. So it's always curving. So you have wind hitting you from all these different sides. It's constantly changing.
I think what struck me the most is I lived for a number of years and I backed out onto a river, and every June, the dam at the top of the river, they'd open it up and we would have kayak festival.
Oh, how fun.
And watching some of these people as the water's just tumultuous, like just crazy. And there was one day I was down there with my camera, and myself and another person had to pull out, like these are experienced professional kayakers. We had to pull somebody out of the river because they had flipped, bailed on their kayak. Their kayak kept on going. We were on a bit of a rock, where they build rocks up and they have that wire mesh around it. And he's hanging on for dear life, but the water is so tumultuous that we were literally grabbing anything on his body that we could to try to pull him out. And I'm thinking, like, looking at that, and these were the pros, and I'm looking at your write-up where it said, like the first year you didn't have very much experience, and I'm going like, holy crikey.
No, this isn't like white water, but the Missouri at our section of the Missouri has about a 3 mile an hour current. So it's a river that you have to take seriously. Like you don't just go swimming in that river. You don't go swimming in that river on purpose ever. But you have to take it seriously, but it's not white water either.
Oh, okay. Let me tell your story. It's more exciting.
Oh gosh. Well,
Okay.
yeah, that would add a whole new element to it, wouldn't it?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Just a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed a woman who had decided to run a marathon with next to no training. And she said basically, when she was out there, she didn't think about up what was up there. It was just one foot after the next. And I imagined you doing the same, one side, the other side, the other first side, the other side. Like you can't think about how far you have to go or where the finish line is or whatever. It's just this paddle, that paddle, this paddle, that paddle.
So the way we got through it is basically 18 hours a day of paddling, 6 hours a night of sleeping, And then we would break that up into about 6 hour breaks. Like we'd paddle for, let's say, 4 to 6 hours, stop and replenish our food, maybe get out. But there are some people who do it straight through. I am not one of those people. I don't think I would even be able to move my hips afterwards if I was stuck. Your butt, everything starts to hurt.
Yeah, I'm thinking that I'd be the person that just sort of paddles over to the side, rolls over, tips over, and hopes somebody can pull me out.
At the end, your crew has to get you out of the boat. There are people that will steady your boat and they pull you out because you just don't even have the energy or the legs at that point. And I'm speaking for
I've done a little
myself, of
bit of
course. There could
kayaking.
be some really hardcore athletes out there that are pop right out of their boats. I don't know.
And more power
Yep.
to them. Okay, your website link is in the show notes. All of your links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, if this conversation resonated with you, except for that 340 part, I would love to hear from you. What's one plot twist in your life that, looking back, changed you in a way you didn't expect? Now, do you know someone who's right now in the middle of one of those moments? This might be the episode to send their way. I love it when people share. If you're enjoying these conversations, don't forget to follow the podcast so you don't miss what's coming next. And if you're listening on the website, I would love to have a message there. Scroll down, way down, keep on going, down, down. There's a spot at the very bottom where you can stay in touch. If you'd like to listen early, I release each episode on Substack on Wednesday evening before it goes live everywhere else. Kim Peek, thank you for being my guest today, for such an encouraging and honest. I mean, you bared your soul there a few times, and I do appreciate that honest and encouraging conversation about what it really looks like to navigate those unexpected turns in life on dry land.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here, and I hope that your listeners can find even just a little speck of something to take away with them.
Well, you. We're talking. It's not going to come to me right away. Oh, I guess it was when you were talking about, you looking back and you did this and you did that and the strengths that you gained. And I remember thinking, I bet some listeners are going to stop, rewind, and then go get a pen and paper and listen to that again because it was one of those like, oh, that's really good.
Oh,
So yeah,
I hope
there's
so.
so many takeaways. Thanks again. Have a great rest of week.